All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today. Today is Wednesday, June 5th, approximately 10 a.m. for a regularly scheduled commission meeting. I don't have any opening comments, except I saw the animals lining up in pairs this morning as I walked to work. So hopefully the rain subsides at some point in time. So I don't have anything else. Commissioners, my colleague?
I have no opening comments.
All right, Julie?
To your point about the rain,
yes.
The last I looked, which was last weekend, we had twice as much precipitation as normal to date. Twice?
I'm glad we're on the 12th floor.
Amazing. Wow.
Well, and hopefully the construction season, which is upon us now, it doesn't get delayed too much longer. Yeah. So, with that, we have a few items on consent today. I would move passage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Okay, item BK1. I move the Commission adopt a consent order in the Public Service Commission's Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning S.J. Lewis Construction, Inc., case number PU12-800.
Second.
A little background on this case. S.J. Lewis Corporation is a Minnesota corporation based out of Rockville, Minnesota. Reservation Telephone Cooperative, RTC, is a North Dakota cooperative with its main office in Partial, North Dakota. In November of 2012, the Commission received a third-party complaint from Reservation Telephone from Alicia Brenna, their attorney. Basically, the complaint alleged that S.J. Lewis was not following the North Dakota One Call law correctly. There was an incident that took place that S.J. Lewis, while installing city sewer near Highway 85 and 11th Avenue in Watford City, North Dakota, as a result of that excavation, they damaged some of the fiber optics that were owned by Reservation Telephone. The damages associated with that incident cost approximately $16,000. What happened once the Reservation Telephone filed their violation, if you will, their complaint, our staff looked through it and deemed that the company was not excavating in a careful and prudent manner. What's very interesting about this case is that the company did have a one-call ticket in. So when staff first looked at it, they had a one-call ticket. But upon further research, the company during their excavating noticed some of RTC's cable around the 4 or 5 foot range. Basically, did all the care required in doing that part of the construction. But after that was done, they dug down deeper because it was a sewer line down to about 15 feet where they hit ARTC, another fiber optic cable. So they did the locate, but they did not consider, I guess, once they got below the 5 foot mark, they figured there was nothing else below it. So that's where this is laid out. Its excavation was not in a careful and prudent manner. S.J. Lewis has actually been in front of the commission before. They have a prior violation of North Dakota One Call. And so this is the second time they've been in front of the commission. In this case, it's a consent order where S.J. Lewis agrees to pay the fine of $1,000 payable to North Dakota PSC, as well as they've already paid RTC for all the damages that took place in the damaging of the fiber optics. So yet we see one more twist in the one-call law where, you know, there is no depth that you have to, I guess you can just basically just start digging. So I thought this one was very unique, and I'm glad that the company was able to take responsibility and thank staff for their work getting this all put together.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just add to Commissioner Culk's description that we're getting smarter, obviously, as we have more experience, but there's two important steps. One, get the locate. Two, follow all the necessary precautions to avoid it.
Absolutely.
And so we've seen a couple of these now where the second step is where we're falling off, and hopefully we'll see improvement in that area as we move forward.
Absolutely.
I think this begs a question, though, and I know I don't think there's a need for a law or a rule or anything, but just education. When companies mark something that they have something there, it would be wise to point out to whoever requested the dig that or the location to point out to them if there's more than one thing there, you know, because I can see a tendency, you know, you know something is there, you dig and you find it, you usually don't keep looking after you find something. And so it might be a good thing to, if we just try and get the message out when you're marking your stuff, if there's multiple things there, to just point that out to whoever's going to be doing the digging if possible.
Well, I think in this case, S.J. Lewis, this is the second time they've been in front of the commission, but I know that in the staff review, there was a lot of back and forth with the company and the excavating company, that they, that's where you kind of get into the who did what, but the company had told them to slow down, according to the company's opinion, so there was a lot of back and forth. I think that's why the consent, the S.J. Lewis agreed, because they kind of knew there was something down there once they hit it again. They were hoping they wouldn't find anything. So I guess from my viewpoint is that, you know, this is now the second find that this company has in front of it in this thing. So, you know, hopefully they don't have any more, but that's part of the law change where now the max fine is $25,000, and part of the matrix in my mind was the whether it's a repeat offense will really weigh in heavily in future cases. In this case, now we've got a company that has admitted to two violations of North Dakota One Call. So hopefully, you know, they don't find themselves in front of us again.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order concerning the proposed switched access price schedule of all the companies listed in the announcement. There's very many of them, I think 19 of them.
Second. Unless you're going to read those.
No, I will not read them, Mr. Thank you. Basically, this is November of 2011. The FCC issued its Universal Service Intercarrier Compensation Reform Order, basically an order that set forth many, many things to reshape the whole telecommunication industry, and the provisions of that order need to all be in place by 2020. There's many different impacts. Part of it is they're looking at redoing Universal Service Funds to the Connect America Fund, also the reduction of interstate rates to match the intrastate rates. That's what this order is today. That last year, the companies filed their schedule to reduce the rates by 50%, to make them 50% closer to the matching of the two rates, interstate and intrastates. This order today actually gets the rate down to where they're equal. So it's the second step, if you will, in the long, I guess, FCC reform order. The impact, I think, to this is it really remains to be seen. We had a hearing on it. And a lot of questions about what this really means to the future of universal service funds, how it will affect rural carriers in North Dakota. So this order today is pretty straightforward. It just sets the new rates for the next year. But the thing that we talked a lot about in the work session was how is this all really going to play out once the final Connect America Fund rates are set into place. The commission also last week worked on our exchange mapping system for exchange boundaries for telecommunication companies. So once these boundaries have been set and they're agreed upon, which they are now, eventually I see the Connect America Fund tying a dollar amount to each one of these exchange boundaries, which will more than likely be much less than the companies are used to receiving, which will more than likely result in increases in costs. So there's many things coming yet in this order, but for today the order is pretty straightforward, just the final step in getting the two states, these two rates to match each other.
We have a motion, a second, and is there further discussion?
The one positive aspect on this particular motion that I feel is good, despite some of the concerns about, you know, the long-term viability of the fund, is it eliminates, as far as I understand, one of the incentives for dropping the completion of rural calls. And that's been a problem in North Dakota. This access rate apparently was one of the reasons why the call completion cost was one of the reasons why those long-distance companies were, we think, choosing to drop the calls and not complete them. And hopefully this eliminates that incentive that was in place and will hopefully reduce the occurrence of drop calls.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I just have one item before we move on to Commissioner Christman. We did receive the updated numbers. There's not a motion on this, but just a little information. we received the number of telephone lines that are now in North Dakota. And we have now 780,877 total lines in the state to include wireless and wire lines. We've seen an 81,000 increase in wireless lines. And we have seen a slight decrease of 20,000 lines in the traditional landlines, wire lines. But what I think is significant about this is that we're continuing to see growth in the wireless networks. But we always have to remind people that, you know, the landlines are the backbone of our infrastructure, that the landlines are still the most reliable, they're still the most secure. And I think a lot of people think that the wireless works all in the wireless networks. It doesn't. The call from your cell phone jumps back to a relay, which goes into a landline that goes halfway across the country that jumps back out to somebody's cell phone. So we absolutely have to have the backbone of the landlines in place. So while we're seeing a reduction in landlines, you know, we're getting to a point where I think that reduction will kind of level off, because that backbone is absolutely necessary. So it's good to see that the number of overall communication lines is increasing in the state. And I think that's just directly tied to the great growth in population in the state. So that's the second piece of telecom today. And I guess if my colleagues have any comments on that, that's all I had on it.
I'm not.
Okay. With that, that concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Mr. Chairman, I move the commission to execute a contract with BNC Concrete Pumping Incorporated in the amount of $882,655 for construction services at the 2013 Scranton-Bowman Abandoned Mineland Project in Adams and Bowman Counties.
Second.
A little background on this. In late February, the AML division issued an invitation for bids for drilling and pressurized grouting at the 2013 Scranton-Bowman Project. This project involves drilling and the injection of pressurized grout into abandoned underground mine workings near Scranton, north of Bowman, and near a farmstead south of Reeder. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used, with notices issued to the appropriate registered vendors through the State Procurement Office. Newspaper notices for the bid opportunity were also published in 6 daily newspapers around the state. Public bid opening occurred on April 22nd, and only one responsive bid was received. The bid came from BNC Concrete Pumping Incorporated of Williston, in the amount of $882,655, which was in the motion. The staff estimate for this work was much less, coming in at just over $644,000. Part of BNC's bid was higher than the estimate, although it was higher than the estimate, we determined the bid is fair and reasonable. Part of the reason for the higher cost is the multiple locations for grout injection and the travel distance from the ready mix plant in Bowman that will mix the grout for this project. A notice of intent to award a contract to BNC was issued on April 24th. The signed contract has been returned and properly executed with performance bond and payment bonds, liability insurance documents, and other materials that were also submitted by BNC as requested. The contract is now ready for execution by the commission. The AML division has sufficient funds and current OSM grants for this and the other projects planned for 2013. So I recommend the commission execute this contract with BNC Concrete Pumping in the amount that I mentioned, $882,655, for drilling and pressurized grouting.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I move the commission execute another contract with BNC Concrete Pumping Incorporated in the amount of $951,500 for construction service at the 2013 Beulah Zap Phase 14 Abandoned Mineland Project in Mercer County.
Second.
The 14 is what it would suggest, the 14th round of this in that area. In like the previous one, in late February, the invitation to bids for drilling and grouting for this project came out. The project involves drilling and the injection of grout into abandoned underground mine workings, primarily along public roads north of Beulah. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used, with notices issued to the appropriate registered vendors through the State Procurement Office. As in the previous case, newspaper notices for the bid opportunity were also published in 6 daily newspapers around the state. The public bid opening occurred at the same time on April 22nd, and again, only one bid was received. This bid is also from B&K in the amount of $951,500. This one was much closer, but just slightly higher than what our estimate was of $934,500. Although it is a little higher, the AML division has determined it's fair and reasonable. A notice of intent to award the contract was issued on April 24th. The signed contract has been returned and properly executed. Performance and payment bonds, liability insurance documents, and other materials were also submitted as requested. The contract is now ready. The AML division does have sufficient funds and current OSM grants for this and the other projects planned for 2013, so we recommend the Commission execute the contract with BNC in the amount of $951,500 for this project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
The last one, Mr. Chairman, in my portfolios is that I move the Commission adopt the order reinstating warehouse license number 1136 of Northwood Bean Company Incorporated at its Northwood, North Dakota warehouse, effective May 21st, 2013, in case number GE-13-192.
Second.
This one may sound a little reminiscent of when we revoked the license a few weeks ago, but the Commission received notice on February 22nd, for a reminder, that the $200,000 grain warehouse bond issued to Northwood Bean was scheduled to expire May 24th of 2013. as provided in the North Dakota Century Code, the company's warehouse license was suspended effective April 24th for failing to file proof of new or renewed bond at least 30 days before that May 24th cancellation date. Northwood Bean has filed a request to decrease their license capacity at the Northwood facility from 383,000 bushels to 97,000 bushels to reflect the deletion of the facilities that are no longer used to store grain. The capacity decrease request was approved, as I mentioned, on May 20th, decreasing their bond obligation from that $200,000 mark down to $50,000. On May 21st, the Commission received a replacement bond in the amount of $50,000 issued to Northwood Bean Company, and so we recommend that the warehouse license issued to Northwood Bean Company be reinstated effective May 21st, 2013.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
One more thing I would add, probably for Commissioner Fedorchik's benefit, since I just learned of this morning, that some of these facilities around the state have need for temporary storage during harvest time, and so they bounce their bonds up and down a little bit, so we'll probably see a few more situations going the other way as summer occurs here if we hopefully have a good harvest and they have need to enhance their storage capacity temporarily. And so this is just maybe a little out of season on that tradition, but apparently this is something that happens occasionally throughout good harvests.
But this one's going down.
This one is going down, yes.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That's all I have,
all right,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, to Commissioner Fedorchik.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Commission deem complete the applications of Basin Transload LLC for a corridor certificate, a route permit, and for a waiver of procedures and time schedules concerning a construction of a 4-mile, 10-inch diameter crude oil pipeline in Mercer County, North Dakota, and issue a notice of filings and notice of hearing in case number PU-12-675.
Second.
On May 10th, 2013, Basin Transit filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit to authorize construction for this 4-mile, 10-inch diameter crude oil pipeline in Mercer County. The pipeline runs from just south of Zap to north to a rail facility just east of Zap, 4 miles. Basin also filed a request for waiver of procedures and time schedules established under North Dakota Century Code 49-22 and North Dakota Administrative Code Chapter 69-0606. With this procedure, we're going to be scheduling a public hearing on the applications to begin in July at a date that we'll set during our admin scheduling meeting, and this hearing will be in Mercer County Courthouse in Stanton, North Dakota. At that hearing, we'll be considering the same things we always consider on these applications. Will the location, construction, operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and welfare of the citizens? Are the proposed facilities compatible with environmental preservation and efficient use of resources? And will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability, integrity, and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion?
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just add one thing. Commissioner Fedorchak brought up that this will be going to a rail facility, and I saw the updated numbers the other day on just how much oil is moving by rail, and I was completely stunned. I hadn't seen the numbers in quite a while, and it looked like almost 3-to-1 oil moving by rail instead of pipeline. You know, I know we're doing a great job here within the state in building pipelines, but just the amount of oil moving by rail is absolutely staggering. So I think that the long-term impacts of that is going to make sure the rail facilities are there for oil, but also for our grains and those kind of things. So it's really good, I think, what's happening to our rail services in North Dakota.
I'll add just a little bit more description about this project because it is kind of an important piece. It seems like a small amount of pipeline, but it connects the current Tesoro High Plains pipeline is at capacity feeding the Tesoro refinery, and they can't accept any more crude. So this pipeline will connect off of that Tesoro High Plains pipeline and feed down to the rail facility Basin Transload has, feed up to the rail facility that Basin Transload has just outside of Zap, and then it'll get it out to markets at other refineries across the U.S. It will have a capacity of 88,000 barrels per day and 29.2 million barrels per year, which, according to the calculation, takes off approximately, if it's running at capacity, 400 trucks per day off the road. So that's a real positive. We don't know exactly how those trucks are operating today, if they're going straight from point A to point B, or if they're starting at a point further out west and driving all the way to the rail facility, but they're getting to the rail facility likely some way. And so this is a nice piece of new pipeline. If this proceeds on schedule, they hope to begin construction in July, complete it, and have it operational by September, and at a cost of $2.5 million. I dug through some of our stats, and this is our fifth pipeline application that we're currently processing, the PSC, for a total current estimated value of $32.5 million. And I also note that since 2005, we've sited $1.6 billion worth of pipeline projects, and that number is growing.
Is there any further discussion?
I do think, you know, this is an interesting thing because being from that area, I've watched as that transload facility set up out there, and it seems like it's, you know, been a little bit controversial in light of the traffic that it causes. And so, you know, it makes the papers and such when things are changing, and it seems like it is constantly changing. I think when they set that up, I'm guessing that there was just almost no idea of how much it was going to grow as it has, because they've been in a constant growth mode out there. This is an interesting application. I'm going to have plenty of questions when we get to that point. But there's one in the application that I just like. I think it's a typo, but I could see where it could mislead someone who would be interested in it to not read any further. On page 3 of the application, it's like a subsection 4 about location, and it says that this is all located in Burke County.
I noticed that too. Yeah.
That really needs to be corrected, because if someone from the Mercer County area quits reading there.
I actually walked to the map and said, I must be wrong and where Burke County is. And was quite confused by that myself. So,
anyway. Good catch. Miss Alana, I'm looking over at you to make a note of that. Thanks. And Pat. All right. Thank you, Commissioner. All right, any other comments?
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order reissuing certificate and permit in the joint application of Enbridge Pipelines and Enbridge Pipelines Bakken LP to transfer certificate of corridor compatibility number 118 and route permit number 128 from Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota to Enbridge Pipelines Bakken LP, case number PU-13-153.
Second.
On May 5th, 2005, the commission issued a corridor certificate number 118 and route permit number 128 to Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota. Later that year, we amended that certificate and route permit. On April 8th, Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota and Enbridge Pipelines Bakken submitted a joint application for the transfer of the certificate number 118 and route permit 128 to Enbridge Bakken, case number PU-13-153. We issued a notice of opportunity for hearing that provided until May 29th for receiving written comments or requests for a hearing. No comments or requests have been received. On April 19th of this year, Chris Cateson, Vice President and Assistant Secretary of Enbridge Pipelines Bakken, signed a statement saying that Enbridge Bakken agrees to assume the rights and obligations of Certificate of Corridor Compatibility number 118 and Route Permit number 128.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio area.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchuk. Just a couple announcements. Let's see. This afternoon, we've got a variety of work sessions, one on Telluride Corporation asking for designation as an ETC. We've got a work session, actually more of an information session. The Xcel Energy is looking at a 215-megawatt natural gas plant over in the Hankinson area. So we're going to have a work session with all three commissioners just to kind of talk about how this case is going to flow. There's the ADP on it, as well as other implications, so I just wanted to get everybody together and kind of walk through the process, because this will be the first time we've cited something of this size, and it's got many different components to it, so we're going to kind of walk through that a little bit. And then following that work session, we'll have a work session on PSC Weights and Measures Program. Commissioner Crispin has been hard at work since the legislature changed the way the program is staffed, and so he's going to brief Julie and I on his ideas, and we'll see how that all plays itself out.
Just a correction. Our staff has been hard at work.
Fair enough. Very good. And then next week is the MARC conference down in Little Rock, so several of us will be down there for that, the Midwest regional group of public service commissioners. One of the key things down there is Southwest Power Pool, which is kind of like MISO. They're a power provider, a regional transmission organization. I want to go visit that headquarters, because Basin Electric is going to be making a decision, from what I understand, whether they're going to join MISO or Southwest Power Pool. And so I want to go learn more about Southwest Power Pool and actually invite them up to this commission, because no matter what Basin does, it'll have a big effect on our investor-owned utilities. So it'll be nice to learn more about that. And then as soon as I think most of us will be back Wednesday, we've got a formal hearing next week, a 10-inch natural gas pipeline in Mercer County. So we'll be up in Stanton on Thursday. Other than that, I don't have any other announcements. Commissioners, do you have any other announcements?
I do not.
I do not, other than to say that I was in St. Paul last week and toured MISO headquarters.
Did you go to the Brain Center?
I did. Went to the Brain Center. They wouldn't allow me right into the Brain Center. I think you have to have, like, super secret security clearance to get there. But I found a long-lost relative working there.
Really?
So that was kind of neat.
Very well.
Okay, with that, we'll open it up for any questions that might be out there.
What did they say was their rationale for having super secret security measures?
Well,
they think you're on your phone with your commodities broker or something?
I don't know. They wouldn't even allow me to take a picture of myself in MISO with my cell phone. So they didn't provide me any rationale. And considering that they operate the grid for the entire Midwest, I didn't really think it was unreasonable to have super secret clearance into the control room.
Commissioner Chrisman, you mentioned that the basin transload project has been controversial. Why?
The traffic flow there, the oil comes from the west and turns off of Highway 200 and goes for, I'm not sure, probably not even 2 miles on a county road, and there's a bridge involved. And the adequacy of that road and that bridge for that much traffic is just kind of an issue with the county. And because the road isn't real wide, they don't really want that amount of traffic opposing one another. So the traffic comes in on that road, and then the empty trucks go west a ways on a different county road and come out through Zap and get back out onto the state highway again. And so for the people living out there, they just feel that they're in an area that just does not have adequate roads for the level of traffic that's occurring.
Will this project do anything for that situation?
Well, I'm unclear on that, and I'm waiting for the hearing. I'm not sure if this is an alternative method to get the oil there as opposed to hauling it in, or if this is an expansion of the transload facility. And so now they'll continue to haul in just as much as they have before, but also ship out what they can get in with the pipeline. I don't know the answer to that. I think in the long run, if they continue to haul in as much or more as what they have been, between the county or the transload facility or whoever's the oil is belonging to, you know, someone's probably going to have to upgrade the roads if they continue this level of traffic, though.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how many trucks go to that place a day?
I do not know numbers on it, no.
I think Commissioner Vidorchak, you had some numbers on trucks you put out there.
Well, that's how much this pipeline, if running at capacity, would reduce it by 400 per day. And I'm not clear right now if there's a pipeline serving that transload facility or if it's all served by truck. I don't know how they're getting their oil currently.
I think right now it's all trucked in.
So this would have to improve that in some respect then, because this provides a link via pipeline. And that's what they say in their application, that this will reduce the truck traffic because they can access the basin transload by pipe.
Commissioner Call, could you just tell us exactly what you're talking about when you say you saw these staggering numbers on rail shipments? I mean, what numbers are you talking about?
The Justin Kringstad sent out their updated numbers on the amount of oil leaving the state vice pipeline, vice rail car. And I had not seen that diagram in a while. And basically, it was a pie chart that showed 2/3 of that pie chart was rail, and then, you know, less than 1/3 being pipeline. And I guess I figured those numbers were still in favor of pipelines, and I had not seen those updated rail numbers in a while. And it really took me off guard. I mean, it was good, but I was just surprised at just how much is going by rail, knowing how much is going by pipeline.
What significance do you think this has as to the development of pipelines and what the commission does?
Well, I think that it just the producers are figuring out, you know, what's the best way for them to move their commodity to market. So for the PSC, I think our goal is just to react once they get the applications for the pipeline. And I think what's happening is that the producers are opting for going to rail because then they can predict they can pick what refinery they want to take it to. So for us, I think it's just good that they're getting more opportunities to remove the oil, and we'll continue to site whatever pipelines come our way, I guess.
Do you think that this is slowing down pipeline development?
I don't, it's their choice, I guess. It's a producer's choice if they want to go by rail or they want to go by pipeline. I wouldn't say it's slowing it down in the sense that when we get the applications, many of them, like the one we have today, are going to be a small pipeline which will assist in the rail services. So we've got Enbridge that's got a 160-some-mile pipeline that's slated to go across the northern part of North Dakota. So I don't think they're really one slowing down the other. I think producers are making choices, and we're reacting the best we can to meet the needs of the state.
Why do you think that there is such a an imbalance, if I can use that word, in favor of rail shipment?
I think that short-term, it's easier for them to put their product on a rail service, as well as they can predict their markets. Long-term, I think, as they figure out just exactly the amount that's going to come out of the ground, you'll see more pipelines. And eventually, you may see a shift back to the higher number by pipeline. That's my comment about rail services, that the rail companies are putting a lot of investment into these rail services. So no matter what happens with the oil industry, it's good for our farmers and ranchers because they're going to have an increase in rail services that maybe they wouldn't have had with the without the oil development. It's hard to imagine. I'm from Botno, and it's hard to imagine them putting a lot of money into the rail services up there without the increase in oil traffic.
When you say they're putting a lot more money into rail services, what do you mean by that?
Well, you just look north here, just south of Max. I'm forgetting the name of the town right there. They've expanded the track system to where they used to have just maybe one turnout lane, if you will. Now they're having many different areas throughout the line, the CP line in particular, where they're running parallel lines so they can get more cars through there. They can do more things.
So there's more trackage.
More tracks are going down, as well as they're doing I won't say a better job, but I think they're looking at upgrading certain track areas that maybe wouldn't have been upgraded with just the facilities. I know in Drake, they're looking at, basically improving some of the facilities there because there's so much more traffic going through. They're just looking at different ways to improve what's the word I'm looking for, the ties and those kind of things.
I'm sorry, I missed the first bit about the order on St. Louis.
Oh, S.J. Lewis?
S.J. Lewis, St. Louis.
Sure.
S.J. Lewis Construction. Can you tell me what you did with them?
Well, the long and short of it is S.J. Lewis is a company out of Minnesota. Reservation Telephone, of course, is in the Parshall area, and Reservation Telephone filed a complaint against S.J. Lewis for violating North Dakota's one-call law. S.J. Lewis was working on digging some sewer systems in for the city of Watford City, and basically what happened is the staff got the complaint, they did the research on it, they deemed that the company did have a locate ticket, but in the matter of doing their digging, they located infrastructure at the 3-4 foot level, and they assumed that's what it was. The pipe was well below that at the 15 foot level, so they hit some of Reservation Telephone's infrastructure at that level. So they basically the $16,000 of damage took place. The company in this case agreed that they were not excavating in a careful and prudent manner. Staff recommended a $1,000 fine. I agree. The commission agreed by its previous vote that was the appropriate amount, and this is the second time this company has violated Call Before You Dig and received a fine. So it's now the second time for this company, and given the backdrop of the new law, this will weigh more going forward.
So they agreed to this fine?
They did. It's a consent order.
Okay.
So they agreed to the fine, and they also have paid all the damages to Reservation Telephone.
I just want to make sure I'm clear. The Reservation Telephone, what was their infrastructure that was damaged?
It was a fiber optic line at the depth of approximately 15 feet.
And what was it that they encountered the first time that they thought was the?
More fiber optic lines.
Okay.
There's just so much development going on. What it looked like is Reservation Telephone had infrastructure at the 5-foot level, and they were doing they had done a directional bore underneath the road, and it was very deep, but that's just where it was as it, working its way back up to the surface.
So they dug down approximately 5 foot. They found this fiber optic line. They thought that was what was referred to when the one call survey was made. Okay, we have this fiber optic line. This is what we're looking for. And they then proceeded to dig deeper and hit another fiber optic line they didn't know about.
Absolutely. And the Reservation Telephone and the staff review talking to them, their viewpoint is they'd made the company well aware that there was much more infrastructure in that, and that's where the care required part of the law is what this actually deals with.
If this is the second time that they've had a problem, why are they being fined $1,000?
Well, the first fine, I believe, was $500. The existing law is the max is $5,000. The previous fine we did, the max of $5,000, was dealing with fatality. We've issued out fines at $3,000 where there was significant infrastructure damage. In this case, the company, no one was injured. The company agreed to pay the fine, and I felt $1,000 was prudent given the current rate structure, if you will, fining structure.
Were there any effects by the, did they cut the line? Is that the deal?
They did. They cut the line, and I guess I don't know off the top of my head. I did not hear about, the hospitals being out of service for very long. Reservation Telephone was able to, I think, route their traffic a different way because they've got a pretty good loop system up there.
But you thought that even though this is a second strike, so to speak, that $1,000 is enough?
I did, yes. Okay. Because given the backdrop of the hierarchy, that no one was killed, no one was injured, there was not the significant outages that we'd seen, like where the violation or potential violation where they hit a gas line where 3,000 people are out of gas during the winter for a long period of time. That's more significant, if you will, than this. But yet it is significant. It's a second time.
Well, I was thinking that if you cut a fiber optic line, isn't that fairly serious in terms of, you know, it might have knocked people out of phone service, internet service, and who knows what kind of damage was done?
It certainly could be, but in this case, reservation telephone had their ability to reroute traffic. You know, the goal here is not to find
people. So you're cutting slack to this company because reservation telephone has a good backup system?
I believe we're being consistent in administering the law that we've done this in previous cases.
All right. I was not, frankly, understanding you when you were talking about the switched access orders and the price schedules, those 19 companies.
Sure.
What is that about, please?
Basically, the FCC order of 2011 set forth a variety of criteria for access charges that at the end of this year, intrastate access charges and interstate access charges should match. And so last year, these 19 companies came in. They filed their schedule to reduce it by 50%. They came in here for the previous hearing a couple weeks ago and showed their plan to reduce it so they would equal each other. So all this is matching up the two rates so they equal each other as part of the guidelines set forward by the FCC.
How does this affect what consumers are going to be paying for long distance?
Well, that kind of remains to be seen, I guess. It should, in theory, help them reduce the cost of long distance. The question is, the companies that provide the services still, some of the local companies, if you will, are not going to have the same amount of money coming into their pockets. So the long-term goal, I think, is this: it should reduce costs for long distance because it increases competition.
Well, what is going to be the effect for these companies having less of this income?
Well, they'll have less income. The goal, though, is long-term, is the consumer the ones to benefit. And that's why my conversation about the FCC order is revamping the Universal Service Funds, which we turn into Connect America funds. A lot of the telcos that we deal with are concerned about this, and they're looking at their business models. So the long-term goal of the FCC order is to lower costs for consumers. It could impact to where some of these companies do not have a business model that might not work down the road. And that's some of their concern.
So were these folks basically gouging their customers up until now, or what were they doing if they were charging that much more for access?
I think it was this is a case where states have had the right to set their own rates, and that's when Commissioner Fedorchak talked about the call completions. States have had the ability to set their own rates, and the FCC order basically leveled the playing field. And there are court cases pending on this where is this a state's right to charge more? But in the hearing, basically everyone agrees that they have to complete this schedule. If the court cases go the other way, you might see that rates go back, but this is a case where states have had the ability to set their own rates.
Commissioner Fedorchak, you mentioned an incentive that companies have to drop calls. Could you explain to me what that means?
Sure. So when the long-distance company is carrying a call from point A to point B, they pay a fee on the front end to take the call, and they pay a fee on the back end. This is dealing with the final completion fee. That fee used to be, we could set it, as Commissioner Kalk was saying, states could set it however they wanted. And in North Dakota, ours, I think, were a little bit higher than in other places. And so now this, making all these fees the same across the board, that eliminates, I believe, an incentive for these long-distance carriers to say, oh, here's a place where it's expensive to complete this call. We're not going to do it, and we'll drop this call rather than complete it. They weren't legally supposed to do that, and some have been fined by the FCC for that practice, but it was hard to trace and difficult to process, you know, and find out who's doing it and actually follow through with fines. So this, by eliminating this fee or making it equal, that eliminates that incentive for dropping those calls.
And these orders, at least in theory, make it, will it broaden the choices that telephone customers have as to which long-distance company they use? I mean, does this current practice deter long-distance companies from offering service in North Dakota in the first place?
I do not believe so, but...
No, I wouldn't think it would at all. They still have a list of choices. They can go Verizon, they can go AT&T, they can go SRT, they can go West River Telephone. Not picking favorites, of course.
Oh. Well, I think you would if, like, NDSU set up a long distance.
We would have to have a special meeting on
that. the bids on the grout work, is it a concern that there, first of all, on RC2, the $951,500 bid, what was the engineer's estimate there?
It was just slightly less than that. I'll have it in a minute here. The bid came in at $951,500. The engineer's estimate was $934,500.
Is it a concern that these bids, first of all, that there was only one bidder, if I'm understanding it correctly, and also these bids were higher than expected? How much of a concern is that?
Well, I think every construction project in North Dakota, at least every construction project in western North Dakota, it's a concern because the reality is everybody's busy, everybody's got all the work they can just about handle and get employees to carry out. And so whether it's a small project in somebody's house or a big project for the DOT, you know, redoing a long road or something like that, everything is coming in high. In this case, in number RC2, it's only a couple percent. It's actually, I think, very close.
15,000.
Yeah. So
I was thinking more along the lines of the...
RC1 is more significant, and I'm going to watch Jim to see if I misstate this, but one of the things there, that one is an RC2, that company's been doing work around Beulah for a while, and so they have a batch plant there. Now in RC1, that's down around Bowman, and so this company's willing to do it, but it's just going to come in a lot more because they don't have a batch plant there, so they have to get the mix done at a ready mix place in one of the towns there. I think it's Bowman, and so it's just coming in a lot higher than if they had a business model where they were set up down there already. But since there are no other bids, it's really our only option. That's what's driving up the cost, that they're using a third party to do the ready mix work.
Please tell me what a batch plant is.
It's where this grout is mixed, like where you would get cement from.
Okay. Dale, if I could, about 3 years ago, we really noticed an uptake in the cost of these kind of projects throughout the state, just because, like Commissioner Christman said, just the amount of work out there. But we did have a case where a company came in with a very, very low bid compared to the rest of them. And the commission, because the way the laws were such, went with that low bidding company. And we had a lot of problems with them. They ended up not completing the work. And so we ended up having to shift that over to another company. So I guess I'm less concerned if we've got a company we have a history with that comes in just a little bit more, because we know we've got a reliable company doing the work. The concern is just to get these projects done.
That being said, you do have a finite amount of money for a year, or is it a year, your yes. grant?
Yes.
Federal grant. Do you know how much money is in that grant pool?
I'm looking to Jim here.
I think for this year's projects, we had some carryover money from last year, as well as this year's money. I think we had around $3.5 million available for this year.
And there were some of the projects that came in for less than estimated, too. So some of these balance out a little bit.
I guess
bit.
The point what I was getting to is that, do you think that because of this trend of spending more on these projects than you expect to, you'll be able to do fewer projects?
Well, ultimately, we'll probably end up being able to do fewer projects if they reduce the money that we have available to us. I think that end of the equation is probably even a bigger problem. But yes, as costs go up, we can only do as much as we have money available to do.
When you say reduce the amount of money available to us, how is that going to happen?
Well, the the pool of money that this comes from was reduced by 5% through the sequester.
I think closer to 10.
Closer to 10%. And going out into, you know, some years into the future, it looks pretty stable for the next few years. But going farther out into the future, we know that this money is going to be less. For AML projects.
Do you know what's in the grout? I was curious. What do they use for grout?
I do not know, but I'm sure Jim has an explanation.
It's basically water, sand, a big component, then mixed, include fly ash in the mix, and Portland cement, one of the main components.
I've watched them a little bit from a distance, and it looks like just really, really way overwatered concrete that they're running from.
I was just trying to think of some kind of fracking analogy.
I was thinking spam.
Yum. I was looking at the consent agenda. There are several construction inspection contract extensions for wind energy projects. There's four wind energy projects and a transmission line. Can you tell me what the deal is with that, please?
I believe in all those cases where there's extensions, it's just the work has not been completed yet, and so we extend the contract, and for a variety of different reasons for each different case.
Okay. Do you know how long these extensions are for?
I believe they're two-year extensions for all of them. And some are just new contracts, but it's part of the broader idea, I guess, we had a couple years back of making sure we use the siting fees to do post-construction inspections. Just because there's the amount of work going on, we want to make sure we're doing a good job in the front end and the back end.
How easy was it to get a hold of S.J. Lewis Construction?
S.J. Lewis is very good to work with. We've had cases where other companies have been very difficult to work with, but S.J. Lewis, you know, they seem like a pretty good operation just trying to get used to what's going on in the state.
The gas plant that you're having the hearing on this afternoon?
Just an informal discussion on it. There's no hearing this afternoon.
This gas plant that you're having an informal discussion on this afternoon, what is that project?
The proposed 215-megawatt natural gas to electricity plant over in the Hankinson area. And it's interesting because the company has filed an ADP in front of the commission as well as the PCNN, and so I want to sit down and talk with my colleagues about it because, you know, it's different. It's in North Dakota, so the ADP law will be applied a little bit differently, and just make sure we're all on the same sheet of music, knowing what the process is. And if there's questions, there's some questions that staff might have that we want to commission advisor staff might have that we want to make sure the advocacy staff is aware of. And there could be implications on this over in Minnesota as well because Minnesota has already approved part of this, not this project, but a related project in Minnesota. So there's some relationship questions that might be developed between the two states. I think it's good that we're seeing more natural gas being potentially used, but there's just a lot of concerns and questions that we want to ask before we actually get into the hearing so we can do a good job in the hearing.
So in other words, NSP wants the ADP and PCNN ASAP?
Absolutely.
See, I would also add to that this is NSP's, this would be their first generation facility in North Dakota, and they're our largest utility. So it's an interesting project.
I was thinking about how significant is that, because they do not have a plant in North Dakota, and how will this, if they build a plant in North Dakota, how will this affect, if at all, how you deal with them?
Well, I think it's significant because it's needed to help shore up the transmission system in that part of the state and provide some generation close to the load in Fargo. And so from that standpoint, I think it's a real positive and has a lot of additional benefits. In terms of how it changes our relationship with them, I couldn't speak to that at this point.
I wouldn't think it would change our relationship at all. We do our job based on what the law is and what we do.
I guess I was thinking about the legislature because this goes back to the debates over territorial integrity, that people would look at NSP and say, you know, you don't have any generation facilities here. You know.
Well, I think for the practical application you talked about, I think there will be definite impact. And XL can say we have generation in the state because it has been an issue for many people in the state. Anything else, Dale? All right. Dave, do you have anything else? All right.
Mr. Chairman, one more thing. I just, as I reflect now, I don't want to leave the wrong impression to viewers or listeners or readers with these AML projects. This pair of contracts with the same company took a little extra time, and so now we're doing them. But previously, we had approved some other contracts, and so there are a number of AML projects, and many of them were very competitive in the bidding process and had multiple bidders. And so it's not like this AML business typically comes in and there's only one bidder. Many of them had multiples.
All right, thank you, Randy. And just, I guess, to close the thought, Dave, we appreciate you being here all the time, but Dale, we missed you, so glad you're back here, okay?
Well, thank you.
All right, with that, we'll close the meeting, and we'll reopen our administrative meeting at 10 minutes after 11. Thank you.